Our enemies are innovative and resourceful, and so are we. They never stop thinking about new ways to harm our country and our people, and neither do we.
Whether long-range weapon or suicide bomb, a wicked mind is a weapon of mass destruction. Whether your solar sun or BBC One, misinformation is a weapon of mass destruction. You could have Caucasian or a poor Asian. Racism is a weapon of mass destruction. Whether inflation or globalization, fear is a weapon of mass destruction. My dad
came into AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota. Welcome all to Mission Accomplisher.
Hey, everybody.
And this is a very special edition of Mission Accomplishers. It is our episode being recorded from the Minnesota Libertarian Party State Convention.
Our first out of the studio episode ever.
Yes, it is our first on location.
Hopefully episode. Not the last.
Yeah, we're out and about. We're accomplishing missions, and this was quite the mission to undertake. The Libertarian Party of Minnesota State Convention. We formulated this idea about a month or two back. Almost didn't happen. A listener of the Minnesota Progressive Repartee, Dallas, she got us in contact with the Libertarians, and they've been quite hospitable to us, I'd say.
Yeah, seem very appreciative of our presence.
Yeah, and I just want to make it clear that this is by no means an endorsement of the Libertarian Party. It is simply a fact-finding mission. We just wanted to kind of take it all in, see what we found, and hear out the Libertarians. So as you'll hear, we sit down with quite a few members of the party and their guests that they had at this convention. And we don't conduct the discussions combative at all. We hear people out during this.
Yeah, I mean, most of it, I think, is we're asking them how they arrived at this ideology or how they found themselves in the Libertarian Party to begin with.
Mm-hmm. But I just wanted to make it clear, because I could see people taking this as some sort of endorsement of the ideology or the party, and it is by no means that. A pretty civil conversation we have with Libertarians.
Mm-hmm. Much to our dismay.
Yeah, I know. We were really hoping for some lunatics.
I mean, I ran into one guy who did ask me if I'd ever spoken to blacks.
That's right. Right early in the day.
Yeah. He was probably the first guy I talked to.
That was a crazy old grandpa with his race observations. But we don't sit down with him. I don't want to spoil it. So actually, we speak with tons of lunatics. And just stay tuned to hear it all.
My name is Chris Holbrook. I am the chairman of the Libertarian Party of Minnesota.
Is that title new?
I have been the chairman for 2 years. I was just reelected for a third year this morning.
That was what I was trying to get at. Okay, it was a reelection.
Yes, yes.
So what does the chairperson do?
Boy, I'm still trying to figure that out. What I try to do is basically herd the cats, lack of a better way to say it. We have a lot of issues and a lot of people working on them, so trying to get them to work together and in the same direction. You know, if you were in there earlier, I think you guys were, you saw that we have Kay. She's our outreach director.
Mm-hmm.
So all the tasks that need to be done for the Libertarian Party for outreach, whether it's this convention or a festival or creating a coalitions, kind of putting those like a job listing and then finding someone to do that. Then we have Matt, who does our communications and our IT. Jill, working with candidates right now, is political. So I try to find puzzle pieces to plug in to advance our activism.
You're the taskmaster.
Yeah.
The puppet master.
Yes.
Playing the strings.
The benevolent taskmaster.
So with your reelection, what are your plans upcoming for the party?
Well, if you're familiar with major party and minor party in Minnesota, the two marijuana parties, Legal Marijuana Now and Grassroots Legalized Cannabis, exceeded 5% of a statewide vote last year.
Yeah.
So they became major parties. So they are allowed to put any candidate on any ballot without having to petition. we as a minor party still have to petition. The only way to become a major party is to get 5% in an election that everyone in the state can vote on, yeah, which next year is going to be president. That's why you've seen some of the people from the National Libertarian Party here. We have to work with our National Libertarian Party, whoever the presidential nominee is out of our party. We have to petition to get them on the ballot and then campaign and market and promote them in Minnesota to get 5% of Minnesota voters to vote for them.
Hmm.
So that's my biggest goal.
Yeah.
And then, of course, to keep bringing people into the party to do all the work, you know, to do the outreach, to run for city offices. You know, obviously, our issues are plastered all over. You know, we promote legalization. Yeah. We promote Second Amendment. We would like to balance budgets, things of that nature.
Uh-huh.
Is there currently a position in government that the Libertarian Party of Minnesota is focusing on? Like, let's say, city level or state level or...
Ironically, Eric, the things we want to focus on and the things we have to focus on contrast each other. Mm-hmm. Do we really think a libertarian can win president or governor? No. But they make us put someone on the ballot to able to get access to all the ballots below it. We would love to get a victory in the Minnesota House of Representatives or the Minnesota Senate. But we have to get 1,000 signatures for each person to put them on the ballot unless a president or governor gets 5% of the vote, which is like 100,000 people. So we do, I mean, ultimately, we focus on grassroots. You know, we think all decisions are best locally.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the best government is the least government. And the things that affect your rights, your taxes, happen in your city. So we do have 10 people throughout the state of Minnesota elected to city councils. You've seen some of them in that room today. That's really where our focus should be and needs to be, but we get distracted with this other stuff that they make us do.
Yeah.
I was going to say BS, but I don't know if I can say that on your show.
I'll go for it.
Can you edit it?
It's just the initials. But no, that's very good information to know, and like puts it in perspective like how big that 5% vote really is, because you guys can't run who you necessarily want to just because of the amount of work to get on a state rep race or something. So
exactly.
That's really interesting. My question for you is, where is your why? Like, how did you become a libertarian? What's your history with this?
Oh, gosh. Great question, Hunter. The start for me came after Obamacare got passed, and then the Supreme Court said they upheld it. I think that was in 2012. I was never politically active before that. I was never a Republican. I was never a Democrat. I was sitting on my couch saying, leave me the hell alone. You know. But then they come along and say, you have to buy insurance or you're breaking the law.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, what? I got to buy health insurance or I'm breaking the law? Then I started looking for somewhere to get active. I'm like, okay, I'm going to stop sitting on my couch. I'm going to start speaking out, lending a voice, you know, volunteering, donating, whatever I can do. I went to a rally for a Republican guy. His name was Kurt Bills. He was running for Senate in 2012 against Amy Klobuchar. And I liked him because he was a educator on economics for a high school nearby. And he was like a citizen legislator. Hey, you get voted into office. When you're done, go back to your citizen life, all this stuff. I'm like, oh, okay, maybe I'll support this guy in this party. Well, at that event, there was a table there for the marriage amendment law that they were trying to pass at the time, saying you have to vote to make sure marriage is between a man and a woman. And I'm thinking, I don't care if a man, you know, who marries who.
Yeah.
You know, like I tell my wife, you know, gay people should be as miserable as heterosexual people and getting married. But then I ran into two guys at Grand Old Day passing out flyers about the Libertarian Party, and it's like, you know, economically conservative, yeah, that's me. Socially liberal, yeah, that's me.
Mm-hmm.
How do I find out more and get more involved? And that's how it started for me.
Wow, and that's really recent.
Yeah, like, yeah, 5-6 years ago now.
And this is your third year being reelected, right?
Yeah, it used to be 2-year terms for chair. Now it's single-year terms. But after I joined the Libertarian Party officially in 2013, in 2014 they asked me to run for governor.
Mm-hmm.
Which is kind of like when everyone stands in line for, you know, a game of tag. Someone stepped forward to be on my team and everyone steps back except one person. I was that one person left.
That's the reaction I think people, like I expect people to have. I'm amazed when people go out of their way to put themselves in positions of running for office. Like, you have to be a narcissist or something to want to submit yourself to that level of abuse from the public.
Yeah, and trust me, I don't think that highly of myself. I just feel like I'm able to talk to people. Yeah. I like talking to people. Someone's got to do it. Mm-hmm. So I'm doing it.
Yeah, I like that idea that it's more of a responsibility than something you should seek to attain, or it's like a position of reward.
It's been pointed out many times, you know, oh, libertarians don't win stuff. Well, if I was looking to just win stuff, I'd go be a Republican or Democrat. So I'm obviously not in this to make a name for winning a big office. It's to try and get more options and get more people off the sidelines, because it comes right down to it. Two-thirds of all people are really libertarians, and two-thirds of people think there should be more than two parties. Mm-hmm. You know, we have 8 brands of Coca-Cola. We can only have 2 brands of political parties.
Yeah.
That's BS, and people don't believe that. They just sit at home because they're so sick of it. They don't care anymore.
Mm-hmm. So. Absolutely. Well,
is there anything you'd like to add?
Live free.
Perfect.
Joining us now is my senator, Republican Scott Jensen. Scott, it's good to have you.
Thank you, Hunter. It's good to be here.
A member of the Republican Party, but you're speaking at the Libertarian Party's convention. What brought that about?
I sort of see myself as predominantly a Republican, but I have many libertarian opinions. So it makes sense that I would want to participate in the dialogue that takes place in both groups. Thursday night, I was at a local Republican BPOU meeting that was there to analyze what had happened in the 2018 elections. Mm-hmm. I wanted to listen and learn. Today, I had a chance to listen and learn and also address the libertarians that were here. I think that we make a mistake when we allow ourselves to be sort of put in silos. Mm-hmm. It shouldn't be this, or this, or this. As Ronald Reagan said, if you agree with someone on 80% of the issues, you don't have a 20% enemy, you've got an ally. Mm-hmm. And that's the way I believe. I think libertarian-Republican intersection is a strong one, and I think we should look to expand it.
Yeah, I've noticed that within politics, that it seems the closer two groups are aligned, the bigger an issue they'll make of the small differences.
That's very well said. I'm Norwegian. I could never have said it that succinctly.
Now, you have kind of enemies on both sides. You stray from the Republican caucus at times. I mean, the Democrats are always going to have problems being a member of the opposite party in a two-party system. But personal ideology, does it reflect the Libertarian Party? Or how do you form your own ideology? Because I am curious about it. You seem to have more unique ideology than most legislators.
I think as a person amidst the other 5 billion persons in this world, I've been put in a position where I'm being asked to lead. A couple of things that drive me is, one, I have to be willing to disappoint anybody as long as I'm sure that I'm trying to appreciate everybody's perspective. And if in appreciating everybody's perspective, I disappoint some people, that's just tough luck. That's nothing I can do anything about. And I think the other thing that I really try to drive my life by is I want to see others with wonder, not judgment. We tend to judge so quickly. It's driven into us from perhaps our earliest days. But if we just stop for a moment and say, what's their story? How did this person get to this perspective? What was their background? And I think if we just try to see others with wonder and not judgment, I think we'll find being consistent and authentic a lot easier. In terms of having, you know, what's formed and shaped my ideology, I got into politics independently on my own in the 1980s. When I was a kid growing up, my dad was in politics, so certainly I had some of that wash effect from my dad. In the 1980s, I remember initially supporting a guy named John Anderson, who was quite, an independent thinker, and he was running for president. And in the 1980 election, as the election evolved, I became a Reagan delegate. And that was really my formal introduction to politics. And I would go back to Reagan when people say, why do I find myself planted within the Republican Party, proudly planted? I would say Reagan focused on faith, family, freedom, the wisdom of the founding fathers, limited government, lower taxes, protection of life, celebrate American exceptionalism, regard highly the effort of the individual, and peace through strength. When I think of those tenets of Reagan's republicanism, I feel really comfortable where I'm at. I'm not certain that the entire Republican Party would prioritize things the way Reagan did in the 1980s today. I think we've become a party that's been splintered in many ways, and we need to be mindful of that. What are the commonalities, the common ground that bring us together? And we shouldn't, as you said, Eric, let that small area of disagreement drive a humongous wedge between us.
Now, what do you think of the Minnesota Republican Party? They haven't fared too well in statewide elections recently. What do you think's lacking in the Minnesota GOP?
Well, depending upon how you break down the numbers politically, clearly there's more Democrats than Republicans in the state. And if you break it down, you say 40% Minnesotans are Democrats, 30% are Republicans, and 30% are independents. Some people would say that's a reasonable approximation. But regardless, for a Republican to win a statewide election, I think the last time was Pawlenty in 06. Mm-hmm. But in order for that to happen, I think the Republicans are going to have to demonstrate an ability to identify common ground and build from there. They need to get a tremendous amount of the independent voting population with them. If they don't, they can go ahead and pontificate on the street corner as much as they want, but they'll continue to lose.
Yeah, I've always thought that the Republicans would need an Arne Carlson type to win in Minnesota.
Well, I think Arne Carlson did a lot of great work, but if you remember, the way he became the Republican candidate was sort of a twisted sequence of events where the official Republican nomination in the last 6 weeks of the race withdrew. And so the Republican Party stepped in and asked Arne Carlson if he would be the candidate, and vice versa. I guess it was sort of a mutual seeking one another out. And Carlson ended up winning a remarkable November election. I think Arne Carlson does draw from both the Republican camp and the independent camp. Mm-hmm. And so in that regard, Hunter, I don't disagree with you.
An observation I've had is the difference between state and federal legislators in terms of ideology. Because I'm definitely a Democrat. National Democrats, I agree with them.
Hunter, I have medication that can help you with that.
The doctor is here. No, but my point being, when we get to the state level, I find often that I'll agree with Republicans on laws protecting people from themselves. And that was really the reason why I was interested in coming to the Libertarian Party convention. You brought up raising the smoking age to 21 and disagreeing with that. I feel the same way. But do you see a difference being a state legislator in regards to protecting people from themselves?
It's a fair question, but I don't want to overreach.
Sure.
I've never been a federal legislator, so being in the U.S. Senate or U.S. House isn't something I'm familiar with. Certainly, I know a lot of the folks who do serve in that regard or in that capacity. I think that a big thing that happens when you are in Washington, D.C. is it's harder to stay as connected to your constituents because you live down there a good share of the year. For me, I live in my district, and as a family doc, I have the wonderful blessing of having people every day reach out to me, whether it's in person, seeing them in the office or at lunch or at a meeting or on the phone or answering their questions. And so I really get a chance to stay connected to, if you will, the common person.
Mm-hmm.
And they keep me grounded. I also don't have to spend nearly the amount of time that congressmen have to spend. And when I say congressmen, I mean congressmen and women. Mm-hmm. I don't mean to be gender insensitive. But I don't have to spend the kind of money, the time raising money. They spend a tremendous amount of time raising dollars. I think this is really disappointing, and this works against the system of government that I think our founding fathers envisioned. This is not where we want to be. We want to have citizen legislators stepping away from their normal vocation, going down and serving for a period of time, doing their best, trying to help, trying to solve problems, trying not to bicker, try to be bipartisan. And then when you're done with the period of time, whatever that is, go back to your community and work amongst your neighbors and your friends and your family and get the work done that you basically dedicated your life to.
So are you saying that you think there is a discrepancy between what Minnesotan Republicans believe and what national level Republicans believe?
I think there's a natural discrepancy between the connectedness during daily life. I think that's what I was saying. Well, let's just take Congressman Tom Emmer. I'm going to guess that Congressman Emmer and I don't have much disagreement at all on the issues. He will have to legislate on the issues that are before the feds, and I will legislate on the issues before the state. So I don't know that there's really a significant difference between, if you will, Washington, D.C. Republicans coming from Minnesota or St. Paul Republicans coming from Minnesota. I would suspect that that's on an individual basis, but it would be hard to generalize.
Now, I have a specific question. I met with you a few weeks back on the opioid stewardship bill, and it did pass the Senate 59-6. Again, thank you for the support on that and for coming through on the floor and saying what you did. Since that vote, there hasn't been any conference committee hearings. Do you know anything about that or what's holding it up potentially?
Well, Hunter, I want to be sensitive to the process. We have 4 more weeks left, and actually, we have numerous bills that have passed the Senate floor and are waiting for the same action to take place in the House. So then that opiate stewardship bill would go to a conference committee, and the differences between the two bodies would be ironed out, and that, if you will, renewed negotiated bill would then come back to both the House and the Senate to be passed by each, and it would be identical, and then it would go to the governor's desk. So I think the holdup right now is the House is moving their omnibus bills. They haven't gotten to some of these single subject bills. This is a huge concern of mine. We do way too damn much omnibus bill stuff. We should be having these single subject bills going through January, February, March, and April and May. This idea of holding them off and using them for trade bait, and, well, I'll give you this if you give me that. This is bad legislation, and every Minnesotan should be upset about it. Every Minnesotan, I don't care what side of the aisle you're on.
Is there any bill in place or any talk of a bill being written in order to deal with these omnibus legislations? Like you're saying, it seems borderline illegal sometimes what they try to push through together.
I'm not enough of a legal person. I'm not an attorney, but I'll give you my gestalt on it, to be sure. I think it does border on being unconstitutional what we do. We play games with what is germane. We play games with how much you can mush together in one omnibus bill. But generally, the people that are most passionate against omnibus bills are oftentimes the newcomers. It seems the longer you're there, the more comfortable you get with conventional behaviors and, well, this is the way things are done. I would say that that's one of the reasons why we have to have a robust discussion about term limits. As people serve longer and longer, does this serve Minnesotans the best? And I have significant questions in my mind. I think term limits should be exposed to a robust discussion, and I think Minnesotans should engage.
Now, is there anything you'd like to say to our progressive listening audience? You have the opportunity right now.
Well, again, we let words get framed in such a way that a word means something. We have this thing going on with identity politics. You know, if you're a white male, you believe this. If you're a black female, you believe this. If you're a suburbanite, you believe this. If you're outstatement, and I don't think that's healthy. And I would say the same thing to progressives. I think there are progressive people in both parties. I happen to think that if you want to really find a high density progressive people, you might look to some of the parties other than the big two parties. And that's why I've been a strong advocate for making it easier for a third party candidate to get on the ballot. In Wisconsin, you need to have, I think, 10,000 signatures and you get a couple months to do it. In Minnesota, you have to have over 100,000 signatures and you get a couple weeks to do it. We clearly are shutting people out. Don't be siloed if you consider yourself a progressive. Engage, pay attention, and know that you might well find a pretty close matchup with a progressive on either side of the aisle. Because when we start using words like progressive or populist and we confine them to just a certain silo of people, I think we do all of ourselves a disservice. Doggone it, Hunter, I consider myself a progressive person. I consider myself a person who wants to stand up for the broad populace. But I don't want anyone calling me a label. If someone asks me, you know, where do I really stand? I'm a Minnesotan. I'm a United States citizen. I don't want to be having someone make an assumption about how I view something just because I have a letter after my name. Ask me. And don't send out snarky social media posts about me because you think you might know where I stand. Just ask me. I'll tell you.
By the way, I started reading your book you gave me. I'm just at the beginning of those first couple of chapters and stories, but great. I really appreciate the book and for you coming on today.
Thank you, Hunter, and thank you, Eric.
You're listening to a special edition of Mission Accomplishers. We're broadcasting from the Libertarian State Convention, the Libertarian Party of Minnesota State Convention. And we've been here all day.
Out of the beautiful Maple Grove.
Yeah, and the day's actually been nice, too. It's just supposed to be a crappy day, but nice weather, too. Yeah. But funny, early on in the day, I'm wearing my Black Lives Matter hat, and it says BLM movement. And some guy, younger man in his early 30s or something.
Late 20s, early 30s, around there.
Yeah, he came over and he goes, what's that hat mean? Is it the Bureau of Land Management? And I was like, Black Lives Matter. But that is so funny that a libertarian would put that together in his head first.
Yeah, they got the Bundy Ranchers on their brain.
Yeah, you supporting the Bureau of Land Management.
Yeah, I'm an operative sent from them.
But we've had pretty constructive conversations all day. And again, I just want to note, this is by no means an endorsement of the Libertarian Party or its ideas, just discussion and a fact-finding mission that we accomplished. The very nice people here today. Everyone we interacted mm-hmm. with.
And I found that most of the people's main issues that they're focused on are pretty reasonable and ones that I think that a lot of people would agree with. Mm-hmm. Issues like marijuana, ending marijuana prohibition.
Yep, that's been echoed a lot.
Kind of misuse of public funds, things like that.
Yeah, the party itself here in Minnesota, very focused, more so than what I've seen at libertarian conventions and my idea of what they would be like.
And it might possibly be that we're on an off year, not an election year.
It could be, but sounds
more of the people.
More like that the party struggle to reach that 5% is really their main focus all the time because of the difference in signatures required to be on the ballot for mm-hmm. an election.
And I don't know if the number of people here at the state convention is necessarily representative of the
libertarians
population of or the membership of the libertarians, but there's really not that many people here. Not nearly as many as I expected there to be.
Yeah, there's
maybe 40.
Earlier in the day, there was a delegate count, and it was at 30 delegates, and then there was still more people than just the delegates, but not many more. We're talking like 5-10. But then as the days went on, people have come in and out. But less than 100 people, I'd say, at this convention.
Oh, absolutely.
Throughout the day, too, coming in and out. So how this convention worked is there's been speakers and breakout sessions and panels the whole day. And it's all centered in one main room, very small room. But occasionally there's breaks for meals and then to talk about, to organize in the libertarian.
Yeah. I got to give props to the Cambria Suites Continental Breakfast.
Oh, yeah. They had a dank breakfast this morning.
You know, a lot of Continental Breakfasts, you'll have the bowl of cereal and then maybe the waffle maker mm-hmm. waffle. And there's always a line for that waffle.
Yeah, I know.
But here they had sausages, sausage patties, hash browns.
Great eggs.
Yeah.
And they had
cinnamon
the waffle
rolls?
Machine.
Did cinnamon
we
rolls?
Didn't even make waffles because there was so many other great options. And then they had pizza during the afternoon. And
not anything really to do with the Cambria Suites. But that's props to the Libertarian Party for hooking us up
for having,
with pizza.
Yeah, good meals throughout the day. During the marijuana panel, I found it funny that the very first question asked had to do with crushing bones from giving massages and people being intoxicated, and if that was a fear of legalizing marijuana. Really bizarre question.
Yeah, it's like, well, I think anyone who's ever smoked marijuana can tell you that you can never get so high that you would not notice someone crushing your bones. In fact, you might get paranoid that they're doing it far before that.
Absolutely. But yeah, that was a weird one. Kicked off that panel. And then there was a fight on the panel itself.
Mm-hmm. It was between a Democrat, do you have their names? A Democrat and one of the marijuana party organizers.
Yeah, I have their names written out, but I'm confused which one was which, so I'm not going to say the wrong people. But yeah, what happened?
So the member of the marijuana party, and I don't know which one it was. I don't think it was the National Organization of Marijuana Laws. It was not that one. Basically claimed that the Democrat was not working with her. She fired back that he sent her emails full of misogyny and racism.
Oh, God.
And this is near the very end of the panel.
Uh-huh.
But they were arguing outside in the hallway afterwards.
I saw that whole panel out in the hall.
I was posted up.
So, yeah, that marijuana panel had some exciting, weird things going on.
Just some juicy little drama, not really anything to do with the Libertarian Party.
Nope, just some hot gossip. But the observations from the day as a whole, young people, lots of young people involved in this party. And
yeah, far more young people and far more women than I necessarily expected.
Yeah, that was the other thing. A very healthy proportion were women. Like a third of the event of all of the people attending were women. Young men and women. But yeah, pretty interesting. Kind of a diverse coalition of people too. They're kind of a big tent libertarian party, I'd say. Like,
yeah.
Within that philosophy of socially liberal, fiscally conservative, kind of a wide range of people with...
At least in terms of gender and age. Not necessarily in terms of ethnic background.
Yes. This convention is 100% white people. I don't think I've seen anyone.
I believe I saw a Native American.
Oh, James Cross was supposed to speak.
There was an additional one, too. But
I didn't see him, though.
Yeah, I think we
missed
James.
So that must have been when we were recording an interview, but that's a bummer. Would have loved to see him. But let's see, any other takeaways so far?
Just that everyone's been extremely pleasant and maybe conscious of how they're coming off.
Yeah.
Since they know we're here. I noticed that a lot of times people stop their conversations when we walk into the small room, and all of a sudden we're standing in a silent room with like 12 people.
Yeah, but they are very very nice, very polite, very welcoming.
Mm-hmm. And I'm not saying it'd be any different.
Nah.
You know, when you feel like someone's there watching you,
yeah,
all of a sudden you become very self-conscious.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, stay tuned. We got more interviews and observations from the Minnesota Libertarian Party State Convention.
My name is Chris Dock. I'm the current senior advisor of the Libertarian Party of Minnesota. I was the state chair for several years, executive committee member for several years. Have kind of tried to modify my role within the party to make room for some younger people, some fresh blood to come in and grow into the party. So I kind of vacated my official position on the board to make room for other people, but still stay involved on a daily basis.
That's a fantastic thing to do just in general. So often just in any aspect of life, people hold on to their positions and never develop younger talent. So I admire you right off the bat for that.
Oh, no, I appreciate that. Thanks. Yeah, my kind of vision on that is come in, do what you want to do for a period of time, a short period of time, and then mm-hmm. kind of build a base for somebody else to grow upon that. But they might come with a completely different perspective. They might build on what I did. They might change on what I did. That's all good. I'm just trying to do what I can. And like I said, now I kind of advise, but I love the fact that more people are coming in and taking those roles. So having the same 12 people forever is not going to be very imaginative, innovative, or anything like that. So I think that's a positive.
Yeah, one thing that stood out to me almost immediately when I got here was just how young a lot of the people involved in the Libertarian Party are. Mm-hmm. I guess I was expecting maybe an older crowd.
Because that's typical in politics.
Yeah, any sort of political parties, a lot of older people. And those people exist in the Libertarian Party, but it's not, I guess, the majority.
Yeah, and that's, I mean, something that gives me great optimism for the future. I mean, we know this is a long process. We're growing, but that trajectory is fantastic, and the energy and the excitement that these younger people bring in is fantastic. And so they're really latching on to our messaging of liberty and freedom, and they get it, right? Do unto others as you do want unto yourself. Live and let live. All that kind of thing is like, let me live my life, let me do the right thing, and leave me alone. And that message really resonates. So, yeah, it's exciting.
So where does your personal, like, your beliefs, your ideology, why the libertarians for you? What occurred? When did you become a libertarian, and why?
That's a really good question. You know, I probably was a libertarian when I was a kid, and I kind of thank my parents for that. They didn't necessarily say question everything, but they kind of planted that seed in me of, just because somebody tells you this is the way it is, it's not the way it has to be, and make up your own mind on, do you believe that or not? Is there a different way to do it? So they, you know, I wasn't a troublemaker or anything like that as a kid, but I was a questioner, I'll put it that way. So didn't know what the Libertarian Party was at that point, but and then as you get older and start looking at things, it's like, okay, there's Republicans, there are Democrats, you know, I really don't feel like I fit in any of those buckets. What else is out there? And that's how I found the Libertarian Party. So I would say that I was a libertarian in my heart for a very long time. Because again, I just think that I'm going to do the right thing, and I don't need somebody hovering over me telling me what to do every day. And that's how most people want to live their lives. And there's no reason that we can't have that option in politics also. So again, I kind of found the Libertarian Party, not knowing it existed, but having kind of that aha moment when I looked at that and said, hey, that's me. So
That's kind of been a reoccurring theme, I think, with a lot of the interviews we've done so far.
Yeah.
Is people said, you know, my parents didn't necessarily constantly say I'm wrong, but they questioned why I believed in certain things, or they felt like they were tested in some way on their beliefs.
Yeah, and I mean, one thing, so a lot of people that I grew up with, if their parents were of one party, they either followed them into that party, or they rebelled against that and went to the other party just to be a flip.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I think a lot of people in the Libertarian Party kind of took a third path and said, what do I believe and where do I go to find that, versus just saying, okay, if I've got to pick one of these two, I'll go this direction, and maybe it's for a valid reason, maybe it's not. But I mean, again, if you're going to find the Libertarian Party, it's not because you're here for the fame and glory, it's because you really believe in it, right? So
what are your priorities? Like, what would you like to see occur in the state or the country, ideally?
Well, I mean, if I had to pick three, I think number one would be legalization of marijuana, and that's more so, I would call it ending the prohibition, ending the drug war. It doesn't work. It's just an unnecessary intrusion in people's freedoms. It's not that I'm trying to encourage people to say, hey, everybody should go out and use this substance. That's a personal choice. Use it or don't, that's none of my business. The biggest thing for me is we're putting people in prison for nonviolent offenses. Mm-hmm. We're spending all of this money and time on police work to go, again, getting somebody that's a victimless crime, all that type of thing. If somebody wants to be in their house and consume a substance, that's none of my business. It's not the government's business. You're responsible for the outcomes of your own behaviors. But that doesn't mean somebody should kick down their door and say, hey, what are you putting in your body? So I just think it's really an unnecessary intrusion, and it has so many social and economic costs to it. Frankly, I'd like to see it not only legalized, but unregulated, untaxed. I know that's probably not going to happen. So it's going to be regulated and taxed, but at least let's stop ruining people's lives over a plant.
Mm-hmm.
The second priority I would have is education choice. So if you look at the people who send their kids to private school, it's mostly affluent people because they can afford it.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's very discriminatory on getting people the best education. It shouldn't be about where you live or how much money you have. It should be open choice. So the fact that you've got to go to a government school because you live right here, and that government school might not be that great, but too bad, you're stuck with it. I think parents should have the right to choose educational paths for their children. And if you can only afford to be in a certain location, that shouldn't restrict your educational opportunities. So I think opening up the options for education is a big thing for me also.
Would that include things like charter schools? Maybe privatized schools, I guess, is what I'm asking. What does that involve?
Yeah, so I mean, when I kind of have three tiers in my mind of, we currently have government school, private school.
Mm-hmm.
I think there's an option for even a third tier, and it would be a public access school.
Okay.
That's privately owned, and whether that's for profit, non for profit, all those types of details are out there. But again, if you look at all of the, we've kind of got a one size fits all educational model right now. And if you want your children to say the Pledge of Allegiance or not, or have an armed guard at the front door or not, parents don't have those choices right now. If you go to a government school, they're going to tell you, here's the curriculum, here's how we're going to do security, here's what we're going to allow and not allow in class. Mm-hmm. And you have nothing to say about that. So I think the more opportunities you give parents and the more options you give them, then they can pick and choose. And then we don't have to fight about, I want my kid to say the pledge, somebody else doesn't. Okay, we don't have to have that fight. You can pick which school you send your kids to.
Now, what's the future for the Liberty?
He still has one left, right?
Yeah, so the third one is a little more vague. We just keep continually stacking on regulations and taxes and fees and fines and all of these types of things. Government constantly grows and grows and grows and grows and grows. So I just think we need to take a step in the other direction and start deregulating. And again, that's not taking an ivory rule off the board, but we never sunset laws, regulations, all those types of things. So This pile of rules and regulations just gets bigger and bigger, and nobody even understands everything that's on the books.
Yeah.
So that, to me, is, again, that's a little more vague and philosophical, but mm-hmm. I think we need to turn that around and say, we don't need every aspect of our life regulated. And unfortunately, it feels like we're going in the other direction.
Yeah, that's a reasonable, and an interesting answer. I like thinking about that one. Now, what's the future of the Libertarian Party in Minnesota?
Yeah, so we're continuing to grow. I mean, every year, so I've been coming to these conventions for, gosh, 6-7 years now, and the growth is significant, the energy is significant, and to your point, the demographic is really expanding, so I'm excited about that. We've got, you know, this is a little bit of a quieter year from an election standpoint, but we're still growing local affiliates, we're doing outreach events, all those types of things year-round. 2020 is obviously going to be a big year because it's a presidential election. We will have a presidential candidate. And we picked that at our national convention next year, but that'll be a big push next year. We also have a Senate race open next year, as well as, you know, many local elections and that type of thing. So right now our biggest push is on, you know, again, membership, outreach events, and just getting public awareness of what we're doing. We're still trying to push a few bills through and help that through on legalization and ballot access. We're getting kind of late in the session, but we're also planting the seeds then to carry that into next year's session as well.
Do you have a presidential pick? Do you have a candidate yet?
I don't personally have one yet. No. I don't. So I like to keep the options open, and I think there'll be more people announcing. And so I wouldn't want to say who my current leader is, because frankly, I haven't taken the time to research them in that depth. So as we have kind of a wider field, I'll start looking at that. So, but personally right now I don't have one. Just appreciate you guys taking the time to come here today. One of our biggest obstacles is just people hearing about what we're doing and what we're about, and the fact that we are actually kind of normal people and things going on. So
yeah, we kind of,
much to our disappointment.
I know, we wanted just complete lunacy.
Yeah, but. Well, I'm sorry to disappoint you on that factor, but truthfully, I mean, the fact that you guys are talking to us, that just helps us with that outreach and getting people to hear our message. So really appreciate that. That's fantastic. So thank you.
Oh, yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yeah. Well, the day got started here with them voting on their bylaws and their party platform.
Yeah, and chairman and who they were electing as representatives.
And they really got hung up on the minute details of that first bylaw. And I think it was just because everyone was over anxious to do anything.
Yeah, I think they felt like overly contentious arguing about specific words in an entire platform.
Yeah, really honing in, making multiple amendments to a single sentence where no one really cared about it. It was more they just felt the need to engage.
Mm-hmm. And I think that's normal for a lot of political groups.
Yeah.
And then it someone kind of points out, hey, there's going to be some vagueness in any sort of language that we're going to use. We can't define every single word.
And we have 10 more of these, and we've spent a half hour on it.
And if we're looking at the vagueness of this specific word, then that calls into question every second word of this 1,000-page platform.
Yeah, so it was
It's not 1,000 pages. Like
pretty bleak at the start that they'd even be able to get through this whole afternoon. But they started passing those bylaws.
It once picked up the pace.
Once they got in a groove.
And then they were all kind of like, oh, yeah, we all agree that we're not trying to screw each other.
The Libertarian Party, what's interesting is that it is definitely one of the largest third parties in the country. However, it doesn't have major party status because they haven't hit that 5% threshold in Minnesota. So the two marijuana parties did because they have marijuana in their name, and that was enough to garner enough votes to receive major party status. But
and what is it to receive major party status to have to get 5% in a statewide election?
Statewide, yep. The two marijuana parties, they did it in different elections. I believe it was auditor and attorney general. And now they're just recognized as a major party, so they don't have to get signatures to be on the ballot for any race.
And they were kind of rubbing that in the face of the libertarians at that marijuana yeah. panel.
Yeah, there was some members of those parties here, and yeah.
Just talking about it like it was a happy accident. Gloating. Like, oops.
Gloating. That kind of sucks that the libertarians, they're definitely a cohesive party that has like a actual ideology attached to it, but not recognized just because of that word marijuana.
Yeah, every party should add it to their name.
I know. You just marijuana. What would be another buzzword?
I don't know if there's anything that has the public support.
No abortion.
Yeah, but look at marijuana has like 70% approval. Like marijuana prohibition ending it has something like 70% approval rating within Minnesota.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if there's another issue besides things like anti-murder.
Yeah, and the type of voters that would vote for a marijuana party just because the word marijuana are the easiest to pick off to where most people might be a little bit more informed, but we're talking like 18-year-olds are voting for the first time, like, hell yeah, weed.
Not that these issues are not important,
no,
but they're easy to market
saying,
to.
Yeah, that in proportion, that is the one to go after because you'll have a higher likelihood of hitting that number. But libertarians, I wonder how they'll fare in 2020 in the presidential race. I know they don't have a candidate yet, or even like a hunch of who it's going to be. But
yeah, I mean, Gary Johnson is not the worst libertarian option, but I don't think that he excites people in the way like Ron Paul does.
No, absolutely not. Where I like Gary Johnson's on the issues better than Ron Paul, because Gary Johnson had some reasonable takes. It'll be interesting, though, because with Trump running, a libertarian option could garner some votes from kind of moderates, never Trumpers, suburban people who don't like Trump but don't vote Democrat.
But something that I've criticized third parties before that I learned today, or I knew before, but I didn't really put it together, was that they'll go after those large, high-ticket positions because gaining 5% in them means that everyone down-ticket is automatically added to the ticket as opposed to, let's say, they need to raise 1,000 signatures in order to get on the ballot.
I know.
It's kind of made sense to me. Oh, that's why you go for that thing you can't possibly win.
Our conversation about that issue really just put in perspective for me how big that is. Because Minnesota specifically, having to get 100,000 signatures, that is a tall order. I mean, that's a lot of people. And Minnesota's population is 5 million, we looked up recently. So 100,000 people, that is quite a lot that you have to get to sign on, and a lot of legwork, just very difficult. So
yeah, if you want to run for any position now, you have to do all of this work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so that's why you can't just have a
run for the small offices that you feel like you might be able to win, because not only do you have to win them, you have to do all this work to even get on the ballot.
Yeah. So that was eye-opening. Any other takeaways you had at this convention?
Nothing that I was really completely in the black about. Mm-hmm. Maybe that their disdain for the post office.
Did you hear some stuff about that?
No, I was just looking through the platforms.
Yeah, I didn't read much in it, only when we were going through the bylaws.
And
stuff.
An odd, like,
the
position.
Post office, God, hating that.
An odd position against, like, psychotherapy.
Yeah. Very pleasant day at the Libertarian Party convention today.
Yeah, I'm having a good time.
My name is Greta Jennison, and I am the newly appointed affiliate coordinator for LPMN.
And what does that entail?
So they've been asking me to try and expand or start affiliates in all of the 8 districts of Minnesota, just mm-hmm. so we have more of a presence for libertarian ideas in the whole state. So there's a few districts that already have consistent affiliate meetups that are happening every month, but there's a few of our districts that do not have them currently up and running. So my task is to try and find people who are willing to do events or try to run candidates in their area and help them find support systems in those districts that are interested in libertarian ideas too.
That's interesting. How do you reach out to people in those districts to try to organize? Do you just look through the membership lists?
First step is looking at membership
lists.
Cold
calling memberships?
Yeah, cold calling, emails. We always post our information of when we have affiliate meetups on the LPMN website and on the Facebook page.
Mm-hmm.
But for some of those that are starting up new, we find a couple people who are interested in having a meeting, and then we will meet with them to discuss how they can actually become an official affiliate. So affiliates need to have 4 people consistently, 3 people consistently coming with 4 total in the year, meeting around at least 4 times a year, if not every month.
So which congressional district in Minnesota is the most popular for the libertarians?
Probably CD5 and CD2. So CD5 is more in the northeast region of Minneapolis.
Ilhan Omar and then
Ilhan
Craig.
Omar, that whole area. That's where I'm part of too, is CD5. So.
So then, how is it? Do you try to collaborate everyone's ideas into a central itinerary for an event like this?
Our main goal is to have a support system for people who are in the area, and also we want to find candidates to run.
Okay.
That's one of the main purposes of an affiliate, is that you have someone who maybe is interested in running for a position locally, and then you have a support system to help them in maybe running for office in some way.
Which offices do libertarians typically run in?
It could be anything, but I mean, the easier ones are when it's smaller.
A down ballot.
Yeah. Maybe it's like a school district, running for school board. I mean, it could be anything.
Mm-hmm.
City council.
Have you had candidates for state house or state senate?
Yeah, there have been candidates.
Recently?
We even had, Josh Welter running for governor of Minnesota.
Oh, sure, yeah.
So, yeah, it's just a matter of having the support system, and it helps. The bigger we make our affiliates feel stronger, then the more support we'll have for
the
election.
Go ahead.
No, okay. That was it.
Does the party emphasize a role they want these candidates to run for, or do the candidates typically select their own?
As long as they're upholding libertarian ideas in general, but then they can ask the party to endorse them.
It's really up to the candidate.
The candidate thinking. Maybe has a certain thing they really do care about, but I mean, if they're considering themselves libertarian, then hopefully the state will support them, and then we'll help them too with the affiliates. So. If anyone is interested in joining an affiliate or getting more involved in the Libertarian Party of Minnesota, you can always contact us. Specifically for me, at my email is Greta, Greta, Jennison, Jennison, at lpmn.org. And I can help you get with an affiliate that's near you.
Yeah, my name is Mason McElvey, and I'm with the Libertarian Party of Minnesota. I work with them as the political director. I lead CD5 as our affiliate, and I'm also the vice chair of the state party.
How many different roles is that?
That's 3 major.
Three?
I got the ribbons right here, but it's radio, so no one can see.
Yeah, we got nice little
all stacked up.
You got
credentials.
Your press stacks,
ours is red, white, and blue press.
Yeah,
of course.
So same. Actually, we have a little few more colors. Not a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
But. What got you interested in libertarianism, or what just put it a different way, what brought you to the party to begin with?
So I guess I was always pretty principled on, I guess, mostly just kind of the whole harm principle and everything. And obviously that's a pretty common libertarian issue. That's what brings us together.
So like non-aggression?
But, yeah, the non-aggression principle. I don't want to get too philosophical on you guys. But
don't do any harm to
and basically anyone. Then otherwise you can, as long as you're not really messing with someone, we can do what you want. What people don't quite understand is we do have a contingency of socialists, which is really interesting. A lot of people don't understand things like mm-hmm. that.
See, I understand it because I am a member of the DSA in the Libertarian Caucus.
Yeah, but as for how I actually got to the party, there was just you can volunteer for things if you are a member. There was the state fair booth, which is a beautiful, giant yellow booth that garners a lot of attention, and there were some slots open for volunteers to man it and sell some T-shirts, and I just wandered on down there.
Cool.
Oh,
I was saying cool.
Oh, yeah.
So it was really just the booth at the state fair that was your first...
Yeah, I volunteered there, started talking with anyone who wandered up to the booth. Technically, I should apologize. We didn't sell anything. We took suggested donations, so uh-huh. keep that regulatory burden off our back. Yeah, so I did that, talked with people who came by, and ever since then I've just been volunteering and eating up responsibilities as they allow me
yeah,
to.
Yeah, so was it the same day then that you first approached the Libertarian booth that then you went on to volunteer for them?
Oh, no, I was a member of the state party, I guess.
Oh, okay.
I spoke, and then I saw that on the page there were slots open that they needed volunteers to man the booth. So then I just wandered in, helped set up the booth, and from then on I've been kind of sticking with them.
Interesting. So how long has it been then since you initially joined?
Oh, man. It's been a couple of years. I not incredibly long, though. So it's been pretty fast-paced. But, yeah, it's been a couple of years here.
So when did your political consciousness, begin? Was it always libertarianism? Or how did you first start getting interested in ideology?
I think it never really coalesced till I was a lot older. I'd say it was...
I mean, you're fairly young right now.
Yeah, but I mean, in terms of going for it, I'd say it was that my dad was such a devil's advocate all the time. Basically, my life consisted of just reading books and then him telling me what was wrong with what I thought about the books, and then me mm-hmm. talking back to him, and that kind of eventually coalesced into a political ideology. And that was, I'd say that just happened over years and years, and it kind of came to this point.
Is it disagreements with your dad, or?
It was very structured disagreement. I'd say my family would probably be classified as right wing. I know my mom would vote Trump. I think my dad might. I don't know. It's been a growing process for both of us because I'm a disagreeable and contentious person, but in a polite way. And I think it's changed us both, mm-hmm. and it changed him a lot. So, yeah, it's disagreement, which is, yeah.
So what are the libertarians doing in CD5?
So, yeah, our closest upcoming event's actually May Day, so that's on Sunday, May 5th. We're going to run a booth just at May Day to help people know what's going on.
And to clarify, at May Day, you're speaking of the Powderhorn Park event?
Yes, thanks again. That was a good clarification. That's what an affiliate does. So there's congressional districts. We're in Ilhan Omar's congressional district. Make that what you will, and we just do a variety of events, and the state party supports us, so I have a role in both the state party and as the director of the local affiliate.
Now, what about, candidate-wise? Is the mm-hmm. Libertarians, are they going to run a candidate against Ilhan Omar, potentially?
Yeah, we'd want to. I know we have someone that is interested. We haven't obviously endorsed him yet, and that would be both endorsed by the affiliate we'd pick, and then the state party might endorse and also put their...
Okay, and is that kind of standard practice for the Libertarian Party then?
Yeah, we got our big... We just have our standard operating procedures here that can be accessed online. But yeah, that's in our bylaws and stuff. We operate similar to any major party.
Yeah.
So.
Okay.
Yeah. Let's get back to what you believe and why you believe it.
Yeah, I think it's best summed up by... And I hope I'm speaking for a number of libertarians, but obviously not all of them, that it's a concept of, I guess, how strongly you can believe you're correct about something and what we should allow people to do. And I think most of us are going to say in the Libertarian Party that the thing we know most of all is that we really shouldn't be dictating what people do because we don't know better than them. in terms of getting things, choosing what they do with their money, it might be, or could be just choosing how to spend their free time, choosing who they associate with. So it's really, I would say, in terms of toleration, which is, I think it's sort of been co-opted, I think it's a tolerant ideology, not an ideology of toleration. We're probably the most inclusive in that aspect, because pretty much anyone, you can have opinions about how we should go about things and still be able to fit into the Libertarian Party, as long as you're not going to force it on anybody. So, I mean, I might not, for instance, my personal opinion on drugs, I don't do drugs. I don't think it's a good idea to do drugs for, you know, being a high-performing person. But I'm a heavy, heavy advocate for the legalization of marijuana, alcohol, opiates, all that, because people should be able to make those choices, and it works better in a legal structure than in an illegal one.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Issue-wise, what's the most important, like, what are your priorities that you would like to see accomplished?
I guess as a state party, we try to accomplish, I think marijuana is very near the top of the list, which, again, it's pretty cliche, but I mean, putting people in jail that didn't really hurt anybody is, I don't think it can be overstated, the importance of that kind of thing.
I
don't think anyone in jail for marijuana right now would categorize it as just being cliche. So, right.
That's what I mean by that. I mean, I don't want to step right into the trope, but my gosh, this should not happen.
No. So I see myself repeating that phrase too.
Yeah. That's like, where just, the state of that
weed,
one is.
Man, but it's like there's a lot of people whose lives are ruined every day because of that exact reason.
Right. So even though that's up there, just the ballot access stuff. So as I said, we operate similarly to the major parties, but it's hard for us to get on the ballot. You wouldn't believe the obscene number of signatures we have to acquire just to be able to get voted on. I mean, we have to spend all day, every day running around. We just had our huge ballot access initiative, not completely shut down, but pretty much shot down, that would put us in line with a lot of surrounding states that would make it similar to Iowa and Wisconsin to be able to get on the ballot more easily. That's not happening. We're the worst state around like that. It's like 2.5% of the population needs to do it to get it kills us. It eats up our resources to even be able to get voted for. So
yeah, have you thought about changing the Libertarian Party's name to having marijuana in the title?
That works out really well.
That is one of the issues. It's just that I think it's marijuana support due to the underlying principles. So even though we'd love to do it, we sell a lot. We accept suggested donations for a lot of marijuana-related paraphernalia, because we have the T-shirts, we got the flags and everything, and obviously we do all support that. So I think it's just educating people on that as well and trying to form coalitions, which is actually here at the convention. We are talking with people who are from the whole marijuana coalition in a few minutes here.
Yeah, I saw that up on the itinerary. Mm-hmm. So would you categorize the Libertarian Party as rather large tent, big tent, like accepts a lot of viewpoints? I know you were talking about that earlier.
I think in some ways we're far, far stricter than the other parties and ideologies, because we will not accept someone forcing you to do something.
Okay.
But under that umbrella, you can have pretty much any opinion on how you should go about things. So it's I'd say the Overton window on what you're allowed to talk about is really large, whereas the acceptable positions within consent are actually less so. So I'd say the ideological variability within the party is massive, but the practical application of the different ideological positions is actually lower, which is a strange, it seems contradictory, but it's really not. We have a lot of ideological diversity.
Thanks for joining us today at the Minnesota Libertarian Party Convention. Me and Hunter had a pretty good time.
Yeah, this was a very fun special edition of Mission Accomplishers. We'll have to do more episodes like this out and about at other events. So if you have any ideas for places you'd like to see the Mission Accomplisher boys at, send us an email at comment@am950radio.com or just feedback on today's episode. And as always, remember, prosecute the Bush administration for war crimes. We're coming for you bastards.
Bye.
Whether long-range weapon or suicide bomb, a wicked mind is a weapon of mass destruction. Whether your solar wave sun or BBC everyone, misinformation is a weapon of mass destruction. You could a Caucasian or a poor Asian. Racism is a weapon of mass destruction, whether inflation or globalization. Fear is a weapon of mass destruction. My dad came into my room holding his hat.
I would like to ask the body to consider that the Libertarian Party acquire a mascot. And I would like to propose Dobby from the Harry Potter series, who in the seventh book says, Dobby has no master. Dobby is a free elf, and Dobby has come to save Harry Potter and his friends.
All right. Hey, look. Libertarians helping somebody. If you want to go up and thank Dr. Feldman personally for helping out, he's right there, right behind Alabama.
Governor Johnson, does global warming or climate change pose a threat to the planet?
I'm not smart enough.
I believe we need to encourage personal responsibility so people are accountable for their actions.